Hello and welcome back to News Roast. I am Julian Rubinstein.
And I'm Hayden Prowse, and we're very pleased to be back, but we need your help.
We need you to rate and review the podcast and write something little, because that is what helps advertisers get on board, and that is actually what pays for the podcast. It was touch and go with the Series 3 had happened, but we decided just to start it anyway and trust in you, our fantastic audience, to help us out.
That's right. Get involved. Tell your friends about it. Tweet about it. And, you know, word of mouth is king.
Enjoy the new series. Thanks very much for your help. Welcome back to Series 3 of News Roast. We've missed you.
We have. It hasn't been long, but we're back with a whole new series for 2018. We're expecting scandals in the White House with the racist baby president. We're expecting climate change disaster. We're expecting our economy to fall off a cliff. All fantastic stuff to talk about in 18 on News Roast.
It's 2018. Mate.
18.
So do you have a nice break?
Had
a
nice
break. Did you go anywhere?
Yeah, I went away. Yeah.
Where'd you go?
I went to LA.
You went to LA?
Yeah. Very good friend of mine, he split up with his girlfriend, which was sad. But on the upside, I got her ticket. he bought her a business class out and economy home.
That's actually true.
I don't think he expected the trip to go that well, but it's fantastic.
You literally had floor seats at the Lakers.
I had floor side, pretty much floor side seats at Lakers Clippers. I was in the dressing room with all the fucking players. So Nimrod, who's my friend who took me to LA, he sent an email to the Lakers PR and said, hello, this is how he talks. Hello, I'm doing a piece for GQ. I would like some tickets to the game with the Clippers. And they were like, yeah, fantastic. Came in, we were back in the dressing rooms, speaking to all the players. You never have felt smaller in your life.
Amazing.
Speaking to an NBA star. And all of them had like wives or girlfriends from the UK. They're like, hey man, you from the UK? Be like, yeah, my wife used to live in Sutton. Okay.
Strange. Yeah. Sutton.
Anyway, how about you?
Yeah, no, I had a good break. Had some family time for Christmas, which was nice. My brother's got a little niece, so baby times. Slightly changed my mother's reality. She's like a grandma now. She's really happy because I haven't popped out any kids.
It's about your
went
time.
To Chile.
You had one, mate.
Yeah, one day.
Come on.
I was in Chile, which was good. Checked out a place called Valparaiso.
Very nice. You did a doc fest.
Yeah. I was doing some stuff at Chile Doc. It was good. Trying to teach young documentary makers how to do revolution style stunts.
Good stuff.
But it was Chile, man, it's a mad place.
Yeah,
you know, because I mean Pinochet and stuff, right?
Yeah,
so they're literally like, you meet these young people that either we know someone who is a victim,
right
or an abuser,
right?
And there's like an entire generation of people who are like getting involved with banging people up. It's really quite mad.
Fuck that fucking Pinochet guy.
Yeah.
What have we got for 2018?
Well, listen,
News Roast.
We've got some incredible guests coming up, and we're really pleased. And even some of this may be coming to you live and direct from the USA this year.
Oh my
God. Which is going to be good. But I am absolutely over the flipping moon to be able to introduce you to our first guest. He is a British stand-up comic, a writer nominated for Best Newcomer in Edinburgh, which is not easy.
Yeah.
Not easy. Anyone who knows this comedy game.
2014, was that 2014?
That was 2014. Yeah. His series Sunny D premiered on BBC Three in spring 2016. And most recently, you can check out his Netflix special, live at the BBC.
I want a fucking Netflix special.
The only Dane Baptiste. Yes,
thank you. Thank you for such a illustrious introduction and Happy New Year.
I don't think you're allowed to say that past the 15th.
I don't know. I mean,
see, I feel like because we're following a Gregorian calendar, which is an arbitrary measurement anyway, say whatever the hell you want.
I stand corrected.
Yeah, so it could be 2017, it's 2018. It's whatever you decide, Hayden.
Right. Oh,
if you establish an empire and you can have complete autonomy over that, you become autocrat, then we can start over again.
Do you know
if you
want. I would establish an empire just to be able to dictate
start
my
again.
Own calendar months.
Yeah, because I mean, for example, like, you know, you say to the Chinese Happy New Year, they'd be like, psh, I don't think so. First of all, it's Gung Hei Fat Choi. And second of all, not yet.
Shit.
So Dane, you know, you started out in the comedy game a while ago.
Yeah.
I've been toying whether to actually ask you about this, but you were the first black Briton to be nominated for the Perry Award. Was that something you even gave a shit about, being the first black? Or was it like important? Do you think it is important? Is it not important?
I didn't know until it happened, to be honest. It's important, I feel, industrially, because in some cases, when people see something's done,
right,
then it means that, you know, more people are inclined to do it. So I imagine, you know, with Tiger Woods, it created a big interest where golf was concerned, or Eminem would have created a bigger market for hip hop, or, you know, Lewis Hamilton probably has more people of color watching Formula One. So far as being a catalyst for more interest and providing some kind of, I guess, spark of inspiration, then that's, it's important in that respect, definitely.
Because you really are quite a pathfinder, like in terms of, if you think about the amount of Instagram comics, like black comics who are coming up, it's ridiculous now.
Yeah, it's huge.
And it
works. And I think it's, I guess it's come from, you know, that being a frame of reference now so far as how a certain demographic or younger demographic consume media. And also, like I said, these guys have come up against a lot of adversity and a lot of gatekeepers, which haven't allowed them to realize their creative aspirations through normal methods. So they've taken advantage of net neutrality and they're realizing, you know, profile from it. And it's a good thing. It's a really good thing. I've probably been inspired by them to have more digital content and stuff. But for me, I think it's very important because, number one, we have, so now you have, you know, two that adds more diversity to, I suppose, what is the black creative caucus, and that some people can go online or some people may choose traditional theatrical methods or just be on stage. So again, it just means that people aren't limited by a glass ceiling or one particular path to realize their creative visions, and it just levels the playing field even more.
Totally.
So it's a great thing, I think.
So, do you like a starter?
Yeah.
Right, what sort of starters do you jam with then?
I like stuff I can share.
Not like a soup, like a, not like a kind of like soup
stuff you
guy
can share,
or,
share a yeah, sort yeah, of like a meze, like a
yeah, meze,
you know, like
or
a
like
nice tapas,
tapas yeah. or like even, I guess, antipasti or like, you know, kind of sushi and stuff. Because as for me, when I eat out, then I guess the idea is, especially because we use food as normally like an icebreaker because people go to dinner on dates and stuff or for networking. So I guess you kind of learn a lot of people about how they kind of share or how they have food.
It's
and stuff
so
as well.
True.
So they say you can learn a lot about people. So if someone's like, well, it's my dessert or my soup, I'm just like, okay, fine.
And you definitely learn a lot about your mates.
But I just think, you know, the idea about food is that there is this kind of kinship involved in it. You break bread, right? That's the saying. So yeah, I'm very much about sharing meals. And also because like, I want to enjoy as much of the menu as possible.
Yeah.
I'm big into ordering, sort of sharing menus, but the thing is I eat about 20% faster than anyone that I know. So I always order, I'm very generous in my sharing, but I'll just consume about 60% more than anyone
and
else.
And apart from just vouching for that, what he'll also do is if he likes to look at something on your plate, he'll literally just go, like a fucking gannet.
I'm the same as well, though. I have the dining habits of a convict.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
So I've got to do this, then do a few minutes in the yard before I have to go back to my cell. So,
what have you brought us for our metaphorical starter?
My metaphorical starter is basically about political correctness. And it's not me saying political correctness is out of control. It's people that say political correctness is out of control.
I think Gone Mad is the Daily Mail.
Oh, Gone Mail. Mad, yeah. It's Gone Mad. It's Gone Mad.
But Chris has actually gone mad.
It's just, it annoys me when people say that. It's just a maxim that people recite without thinking about it.
What annoys you about it?
Well, because what point have we ever had, has anyone been free to say whatever they want? That's because it's always part of the same speech of freedom of speech. What's happened to freedom of speech? When have we had freedom of speech? Which person alive now can remember a time of freedom of speech? Because there's been no state within society where you can say whatever you want. That's the reason why you have libel laws and slander laws and Ofcom and the watershed and obscenity laws and McCarthyism. There's been or sedition laws because you don't just say what the hell you want. You know, hate speech, you can get arrested for it. So there's never been a time that most people can remember, especially people now who are like, well, would you be able to say whatever? That's never happened. It's never happened.
I like this guy who speaks like that. Let's talk to him. What else would he say about it?
And he'll be like, you know, I just want to be able to, well, if I want to say what I'm thinking, I'm entitled to my opinion. I'm entitled to my opinion. No one is saying you're not entitled to your opinion, but if you are someone who has some level of awareness in science, then you have something called cause and effect.
Yeah.
So your actions have consequences. So you can have freedom of speech. Yeah. But when normally people that say, I should be able to have freedom of speech. Yeah. They mean, I want to be able to say something without getting punched in the face.
Yeah.
Or losing my job. Yeah. And it's the thing, sometimes, especially in the line of work I'm in, I'm aware that you can make cause offence to some people.
Yeah.
I feel cause offence can be, not necessarily given, but it can be taken. But if you make inflammatory statements, like even though the idea is that people aren't supposed to heckle and stuff, if you say something that stirs people up enough emotionally, they might respond. And I have to be prepared to deal with that consequence. But if you offend somebody and you are a short, plump, fat bigot and you say something to a 6'6" black man, he might punch you in the face. And that's what's going to happen because you have insulted somebody. Or you talk about someone's wife, they might punch you in the face. Or you insult a woman, she might want to punch you in the mouth. That's just the way the world works, because if people take offense, they tend to respond emotionally. That's always been the human condition. So this idea that, well, there's no political correctness. Normally, the people that say they're politically correct complain about it are the people that are politically correct, because now it's like, as an alt-right, well, that's racist. As a nationalist, that also means racist. Why are they now
as creating, a racist?
Yeah, just say you're racist. Why are people making up these new names?
Yeah,
to describe your ideological predisposition. Nationalist, you mean just call yourself a racist? Or I look at people's Twitter profiles, and I've had back and forth with a guy on Twitter. It was following the Charlottesville Tiki Torches March, and one of the guys had been identified and was about to be arrested. So he made a video crying about it, like, which again is an example. You've made hate speech and you've committed acts of violence. Now you're going to get arrested. It's, why is this happening to me? I don't understand. So perfect example of someone who had their freedom of speech, is now dealing with the consequences and now crying like a little bitch. So I was like, I tweeted Piers Morgan because he's someone who constantly makes noise about the PC Brigade and, libtards and millennials being snowflakes. Despite the fact this is someone, again, who is very happy to instigate hatred through his false news when he had pictures of prisoners being peed upon, that was why he lost his job. He seems to forget that point, that he almost instigated further terrorism based on no facts. So he presented alternate facts way before Donald Trump did, or the phrase was even coined, but he wants to call people snowflakes. And again, for someone who's so outspoken, you're not on the front line, Piers, so that's number one. So I tweeted him saying, it's funny, these are people that are referred to millennials as snowflakes. Now he's crying. And he's like, he's not a snowflake. He's an idiot. No, Piers, he's a fucking snowflake. Because by your definition, he's a weak guy who cannot deal with the consequences of his actions.
He was such a snowflake.
Such a snowflake. Yeah. Why the fuck are you crying for? Yeah. What? Yes, 2 days ago it was blood and soil. Now it's, what about me? And so this other guy chimes in and he's like, wow, this is bullshit. You can't say this. Blah, blah, blah. I'm like, see, you're missing the point. So my point is that this guy's a snowflake, and I'm like, hashtag white people, but I wrote it with the phonetic way it's written on Twitter, which is like W-H-Y-T-P-I. Yeah. So it's just written phonetically. Like, fuck you! You can't make this generalization! And I'm like, so do you not see the irony of making generalizations about a group of people? You're a prick and blah, blah. I'm like, that's fine, but you're a racist, so it's all good. Oh, don't you fucking call me a racist! So now, to racists, calling them racist is an insult to them.
Yeah.
I think this is really important because, you know what my new favourite thing is seeing Nigel Farage tweeting something like really racist and going, the bullying left are trying to shut me down to say this. It's unbelievable. They're bullying me. They're trying. And it's like, dude, what you're saying is terminally offensive.
Yeah.
Like, therein lies the actual core power of the alt-right.
Yeah.
Because this kind of manifestation of freedom of speech as allowance of Milo Yiannopoulos or Richard Spencer has kind of perverted this very important idea of discussion and debate.
Yeah.
And at the same time, the left, which Hayden and me have got this massive problem with this no platforming movement, have bought it and gone, you know what? This is so offensive. We're not even going to debate you.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I do have a bit of a problem. It's interesting. You're saying that all these racists just won't call themselves racists anymore. It's like their own version of sort of right wing political correctness.
Completely.
It's like, instead of saying you're bald, you say, oh, you're follically challenged. Yeah. That's PC. You say, no, I'm not right. I'm not racist. I'm an alt right. Yeah. It's like they can't.
The alternative of right is left. So what the fuck is alt? What the fuck is alt right? I find it so. I'm a nationalist. Well, what the fuck does that mean?
Yeah.
That means that you live there or you believe in your country. Well, and this is the thing as well. To be honest with you. People that believe in countries, you're fucking idiots anyway. And the reason why you're fucking idiots is because you cannot stand there and call yourself a nationalist and then critique, because they're normally the same kind of person who will critique, you know, or speak about the evils of Islam is a theocratic belief and then be like, I'm a nationalist. Well, your country is just a fucking idea somebody came up with, because a few years ago, Yugoslavia was a fucking country.
Exactly.
Whereas now you show up with a Yugoslavian passport, it don't fucking exist. Even up until early noughties, like Kosovo was not a separate state from Albania. Mm. Now it is. So countries can just be made. There used to be one Sudan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now there are two. There's two Somalias. They're not necessarily recognised. Or in Taiwan, it's called Chinese Taipei. Yeah. So when you call yourself a nationalist, what does that fucking mean? It means you're subscribing to another idea.
They're the same people who... And, you know, again, this is something we've talked about on the podcast, you know, maybe through no fault of their own, didn't really have much education, didn't really understand that Britain actually drew most of the maps, that actually most of the people here from the Commonwealth are people who we displaced or that actually came over here because we asked them to come and work here.
Where?
And these are exactly the people they want to get rid of.
for me, the problem with this sort of political correctness is not so much people being offended about certain things, because people were always offended about something or other. And now you have social media and you have the internet, so people have a voice, whereas previously they didn't. So they're going to say they're offended. Mm-hmm. I think what gets me about it is actually the response from organizations and institutions. You know, people are often just getting fired right now for something they might have tweeted 10 years ago. So organizations sack those people, not because they have an overarching ethical deep sense of what's right and what's wrong. They did it for commercial imperatives. It's like, if we were on a magazine and everyone thinks our editors are sexist, no one's going to buy the magazine.
We'll lose advertising revenue.
That said, though, particularly recently, you know, we had the whole thing with Toby Young being put, in my mind, ridiculously forward to actually be in charge of our universities. And I found the scale of the tweets that were just like so really just like kind of pathetic stuff, like, I'm looking at Jeremy Corbyn and there's a great pair of tits behind him. Like, I just was like, one, but why would you tweet that? But, two, I do find it offensive. And the thing is that
I've heard
that
you say stuff like that.
Yeah, but the thing, which is fine.
I certainly wouldn't be tweeting stuff like that.
You know, I think you can tweet that, but the difference is you're not a fucking civil servant.
Exactly.
Why don't you shut up, Toby, and focus on what you're doing?
Totally.
Until we're in a state where education is in a state where, you know, we are shaping the minds who are going to benefit our society tomorrow. Shut the fuck up, Toby.
Yeah, totally.
And do your fucking job.
But also, do you think outrage culture is going anywhere? I just think it's going to get bigger.
What worries me potentially about outrage culture is that we're going to reach a level of hysteria whereby we're going to start having Orwellian measures. This is the problem on both sides, is that while you think political correctness is an issue and they're an issue, we're going to get to a point where the authority over all of them, because people need to understand something, is that when you're discussing liberals and you're discussing conservatives, these people all attend the same academic institutions.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they decide they're going to be politicians before they pick a party. And, like, you know, if they go to Oxford, all these guys who together are in the Bullingdon Club, so they're all from a similar background and they intermarry and they're very much related. So these, so
it's not, say, so interbreed.
Yeah, they interbreed.
To the cousins.
Yeah, and I say interbreed because they consider themselves clearly a separate species to the rest of us. But we're going to get to a point where they're just going to be like, well, if that's the case, then no one can say anything. Because for me, it's almost like, who said it? So it's like, in, you know, the film Incredibles, the animation, when Syndrome is talking.
Yes.
And he said, but there's a line he says, it's so important about socially, where he says that I'm going to sell weapons to both sides, and I'm going to sell weapons, I'm going to make it so everyone can be super, then nobody will be. And that's what's going to happen, is that if everyone has this entitlement to opinion, despite their opinions not having any factual scientific basis, we'll get to a point where everyone becomes desensitized to anything, which is why now, even if you are someone who is versed or educated in your subject, you can be dismissed as fake news. And then we end up in a state of an Orwellian thing where we have this whole homogenous narrative where everyone's ignorance becomes strength. But as far as I see it, everyone has the right to an opinion, but opinions are like assholes, is the saying, because everyone has one, and a lot of time opinions contain traces of shit.
Yeah.
So
yeah, just because you have the right to express your opinion
doesn't mean
your
right,
opinion's
or
any good.
Yeah, or you're stupid. Yeah. Because
you could give everyone the right to make and sell pies, but some people could just sell poisonous shitty ass pies that give people food poisoning.
Exactly. Yeah.
So your pies are shit, but you're still allowed to sell them.
Paid.
Hi.
Let me tell you about something you might need if you sell a lot of stuff online. Do you sell stuff online?
No.
On eBay?
Not really.
Amazon?
No.
Magento?
No.
Well, if you did, you would need ShipStation. It's a fast and easy way to manage and dispatch your orders all from one place.
Okay, so for instance, the other day I bought some hair wax. And I buy it in bulk. I buy like 20 at a time because you can't get it anymore.
Oh, yeah.
So the people that sell that hair wax, they should use ShipStation.
So whether you're using eBay, Amazon, Shopify, or over 60 other popular selling channels, particularly if you're selling hair wax, for instance, ShipStation brings all your orders into one place, making them really easy to manage from any device, even your mobile phone.
Ah, apparently you can use ShipStation to compare rates from top couriers, including Royal Mail, FedEx, DHL, and UPS. And whether you have one or hundreds of orders, ShipStation makes it easy to batch and print labels so you can get your orders out quickly and keep your customers happy.
Now you can try ShipStation for free for 30 days, plus get a special bonus when you use the promotional code ROAST.
That's right. Get this special promotion right now. Just visit ShipStation.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in ROAST. That's ShipStation.com, then enter the promotional code ROAST. ShipStation.com. Make ship happen.
Make ship happen, man. So that was a pretty, I'd say that was pretty filling for a starter, wasn't it? It was pretty serious.
There's a few chilies in that one.
Oh, some
habanero.
Some stinger ringy. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So what have you brought us for our metaphorical main?
The main is about, I guess, political identity.
So what do you mean by that?
As I said before, it's like nowadays, it's like if you have an opinion, it's like you're conservative, you're liberal, you're right and you're left. And it's like we are supposed to be evolving as human beings and trying to contextualize somebody or perceive them along of two very rigid bipartisan poles. This sounds very stupid to me because no one is completely or wholly conservative and no one is wholly liberal. And so if we're arriving at a point now where we're understanding that gender isn't necessarily binary, well, neither is politics. Like, no one is completely liberal. Because, for example, you know, if you're supposed to be conservative, but conservatives seem to be very liberal with their use of resources. So you're fine with your use of resources, or, you know, conservatives may claim that, you know, liberals want to look after all minorities and give them an upper hand. But if you are a old, middle-class, cisgender, heterosexual white man, globally speaking, you're in a minority. So really, you're a minority anyway, if you consider it. I mean, and these are simple demographics that anyone who's thinking critically would understand. So people don't need to use this jargon to describe who you are. Like, I feel it's a very sad point we're at now where you feel that that's the entirety of your being, in the same way that someone's sexual orientation doesn't really fucking matter to me because it's such a small part of who you are as a human being. And I try to tell everyone, I don't give a fuck who you go to bed with, because come a point in your life, being able to get out of a bed will be more important than who the fuck you go to bed with.
That's so true.
You know, because in a way that the analogy that people refer to, like, sexuality or your virginity is like a flower, that's what sexuality is. And it will bloom in different ways depending on how it's watered and its nature as well as nurture. So I'm just using that example because, like, we seem to be working too hard to define ourselves along these very superficial lines, as opposed to, like, I guess, spiritual or I guess, psychological lines.
So I've kind of got a bit of a theory about this, right? I have a theory.
Oh, you've got the theory.
And I think that it's become, you know, because people talk about this idea of, like, tribalism that's existed, and this huge chasm between the left and the right that's created, as if it's just sort of come out of nowhere.
Yeah.
But it really, really hasn't. And I think it's all down to basically threatening neoliberal economics, right? Mm-hmm. Because the thing is that when the parties were quite aligned, things were actually back to 2010.
The economy was inflated. People, availability of credit and capital was there. So everyone
and
was
people
fine.
People were kind of a bit annoyed with each other sometimes on social media. But as Charlie Brooker famously said in one of his screenwrites, things on the internet were a bit like meh, right? And that's kind of what it was. Now, as soon as you got the kind of Bernie Sanders syndrome in the States, you got Jeremy Corbyn over here, there was a general threat to capital. Yes. And capital does not like being threatened.
No.
And at that point, the kind of language, which is now kind of used by people quite openly on Twitter, traitor this, or, you know, these really inflammatory kind of words, which I think leads to the kind of tribalism you're talking about, and the fact people can't even identify that you could be, you know, liberal and conservatives in some way, is like basically really about socialism and capitalism finally coming back into conflict. Because, you know, particularly, you know, we're talking today only a couple of days after Carillion has kind of gone absolutely under, and, you know, hundreds of millions of pounds of NHS money is going to be spent by the government, whose priority post the actual problem with the actual private company actually just basically not being able to deal with their commitment. The people are going to get bailed out are the private company.
And can I just interrupt you there? Because conservatives, you see, what we're discussing now is the functions of capitalism, where you guys are always harping on about a free market. Well, normally, if you fuck up as a private company, then you fuck up.
Yeah.
But apparently, we have this new phrase, which is called too big to fail, where governments are relied on for assistance to keep companies buoyant, which is socialist as fuck.
Exactly.
Conservatives.
Yeah.
Real free marketeers, would have seen the banks collapse and they would
you see the markets because
part of the system.
Too big to fail, that's a real socialist notion there.
That's the
like, just speaking as a capitalist,
a
capitalist.
Me too, yeah.
Well, if my money as a taxpayer and we're all part of the tax base bailed out these banks, then that makes us majority shareholders.
Yeah.
So where the fuck is my dividend?
Exactly.
In this free market. Well, I should be getting a check. Before these bankers get anything, I bailed you out. So if there are any bonuses to be had, we should be getting those.
Absolutely.
That's how free market economics works.
It's incredible. And, you know, you can see this in lots of ways. I mean, you know, you can see this in the way that, you know, George Osborne, who's now the managing, he's the editor of the Evening Standard, wouldn't even put Carillion on the front page when it went bust, attacked Jeremy Corbyn.
Really? Why?
Yeah. Because he was one of the biggest architects.
The reason why is because he was part of the
hedge fund. But to be fair to this thing, because you started talking about Labour and Conservatives, it was the Labour Party under Tony Blair that was really about these PFIs initially, because they wanted to get a lot of these things done. They wanted to get hospitals built. They wanted to get schools built. But the thing that really gets me is, like, we all know that these people are clever, right? They understand the ratcheting up at language and how powerful words are.
Completely.
Like, because
this is how powerful it is, again, for people to understand, is that historically, these people who worked either in municipal or legal or clerical or medical professions, the reason why they are in a different class than most people is, when you think about it, the designation for, like, a doctor or a lawyer or an accountant, there is no masculine feminine designation. The division only comes when you look at jobs more assigned to the proletariat, or, you know, for working class, whether it's like postman or postwoman or policeman and policewoman.
That's whereas so true.
Once you reach a certain plateau in society, or you reach a certain level, then these divisions no longer apply, because you're considered a different class, which is why, you know, we still use Latin phrases, you know, in these professions, because they were supposed to be reserved for people of a certain class. And that shit still exists today. So for me, it's just kind of like, again, that's my point, is that we're still too busy focusing on all these other ways to divide ourselves. You need to have a reason to bring ourselves together and realize, like, you have been fucked over, because these people are very much linked. You know, like I said, Labour were happy to deregulate. Conservatives are now trying, you know, basically to privatize the NHS. And for me, now I get to a point where I guess there must be a reason. If they're all opposed to Jeremy Corbyn, and this is after we've had the Montag Fonseca scandal and expenses scandals and insidious, like, child molestation ring scandals, and all of these people are within his own company, even within the Labour Party, are opposing Jeremy Corbyn and saying how unrealistic he is. Well, there has to be something to him.
Yeah.
If this system that's been going on for so long, which has made most of Labour's working class previous votes has become feel politically impotent to the point where they're drifting towards UKIP, then there has to be something to
this. They just want their country back, mate.
Are you a big Corbyn supporter?
I support Corbyn as himself. So far as politically, I try and stay apolitical, and I feel like...
So it's interesting. So what you're saying about people being, you know, either being conservative or a liberal or a, you know, a socialist, and that's a sort of label that isn't particularly helpful. Are you saying that you support Corbyn despite your misgivings? Like, there are things that you don't agree with, but...
Yeah, some things I don't agree with.
On,
I mean, yeah. But
on the
so
whole,
far as,
you'll support that over
on
something
the whole,
else.
Yeah, on the whole, someone who's just like, I want to preserve workers' rights in Brexit. I'm on the fence, but I want to preserve workers' rights. That's my priority.
Yeah.
Or someone is like, preservation of our healthcare system is my priority. Then, yeah, I support that. I guess I've felt historically people that have been leaders, and most of them, and people that I have found inspirational, have acted outside of the bipartisan political paradigm. So when someone comes along, I completely support Jeremy Corbyn. I feel, realistically speaking, maybe you won't be able to execute a lot of the his intentions through Labour or through a bipartisan political party. But then at the same time, maybe he wants to address all of that. But that's the problem, is that you try and change the system, and sometimes it's the system that will change you.
You know, one of the greatest things, actually, about the first series of this podcast was when we were speaking to James O'Brien, who you know, a lot of people see as like the leader of the resistance. He said, I'd voted by the time I was 35 for three different political parties, because I thought they made the best argument once, then the Liberal Democrats made the best arguments then, and then Labour. And that just, it's rare now, isn't it? It feels like it's really rare.
People have this need for association. Just neo-tribalism.
Yeah, yeah. And I always find myself much more right. I fucking hate subscribing to an entire political ideology simply because you agree that trains should be nationalised, or simply because you think parts of the NHS could do with a bit of a shake-up or whatever. Like, then you suddenly have to be a Tory, or
and that's the thing. That's not how democracy works. The execution of it doesn't necessarily work. Even for me, it's like, how can you be too young to vote if you're 16, but you're old enough for the age of consent for sex?
Totally,
so
man.
Then you can be fucked, but you can't stop yourself from being fucked over.
Or you can kill someone.
Yeah,
go
that
to
is
war.
Brilliant. You can be fucked, but you can't
stop yourself from being fucked over.
I mean, that is genius.
Because you know
line.
Something? If you're 16 years old or 15 years old, and you may have been, so take Rotherham, because a lot of time when I discuss these things, people like to bring up Rotherham. Well, how about if young children were able to vote, potentially a lot of children would probably vote for, you know, maybe military spending and bank bailout funds to be diverted to maybe towards social services to helping vulnerable children in care, so they don't end up at the mercy of some pervert. So maybe that's something that kids would fucking vote for. But since they're being left out of the narrative, then how can they vote for that? Because they know what will make them more secure as children more than anybody else, or as adolescents more than anyone else. Mm. So for them to be kept out of these things, which have a direct effect on them when we're discussing issues of age of consent and
also,
that kind of thing.
We've seen, you know, during Brexit, and half of the people that seem to think their opinions are worth being voiced, that half of the population has an intellect much lower than your average 16-year-old.
Well, yeah.
Like, people are fucking idiots.
Yeah, people are fucking idiots.
I trust your average 16-year-old over half of these dickheads that are talking about Brexit.
Because they're more worldly, they're globalised, and they have an education where some people still read newspapers.
Maybe from the age of four, they'd be like, hello, Google. So what's the deal with democracy, then?
Yeah, and
just ask fucking Siri. Should we leave the EU?
Exactly.
No,
but even then, it's like, anyone who's has a rudimentary understanding of economics must know that money has no borders. Mm. That's how you can bank, and that's how you can bank if you go to other countries. So why the fuck you think that by leaving the EU, you're going to be an insular economy from the rest of the world? I do not know. And also, when we're looking for new trading partners, well, the affluent white people are predominantly based in Europe. So if you don't want to trade with them, who do you want to trade with? Because all it needs is America, who have no real exports. Yeah. Nobody wants those.
Yeah.
So the idea that you're not supposed to travel anywhere else, like, it's always, well, you want to have remove a European influence from the UK? Why don't you start with the fucking Premier League then? Since you want to do it so badly, start there first. Or you think it's going to be okay? Once people realise they can't import Russian brides anymore, it's not going to be that fun.
Oh, man.
It won't be that fun.
Let's get on to your metaphorical dessert. What have you brought us?
This is about globalism and people's ignorance to it. So it's like, for me, again, it's going back to this idea about countries and stuff, and we now, like, you're aware that of other countries in the world, like this idea of you becoming an insular nation, we're past that point now. And I just think, if you're going to accept the other perks and boons of the future, such as your access to technology and running water and regular access to antibiotics, and then accept that we don't really have borders anymore, because all countries have to interact and are subject to one another.
Okay, but we're living in a time where there's probably been a reassertion of nationalism to a point that certainly in my lifetime I've never ever seen. What do you put that down to?
Stupidity. You're fucking stupid. Oh, why can't us celebrate St. George's Day? Because dragons don't fucking exist. So you can celebrate it, but how far do you want to take it? Because there were no such things as dragons. So it's fine for you to celebrate St. George's Day, but what's the basis for it, though? That a guy fought a dragon? Well, when's the last time you saw a fucking dragon?
Personally, I just like to see the entry of all dragons banned into this country.
Right?
Dragons are coming over here. They're taking our jobs. You know some of them have very culturally different backgrounds. And they're
mixing with
our
dragons.
English. They should learn English.
Have you seen a Chinese dragon? They don't look anything like.
No.
But every single Gung Hei Fat Choi, Hayden, they show up with their extra dubious humanoid legs.
Yeah.
Trying to find British dragons.
British dragons.
Listen, at least British actors are riding British dragons all over the world. Right?
What about the people that say that, you know, instead of sort of taking advantage of Chinese workers in Chinese factories so we can buy, you know, shitty knickknacks at 2p a time from shitty shops in the UK, why don't we pay our own workers a little bit more and bring the jobs back here to areas that have not really profited from this globalism?
I'm glad you asked me that, Hayden, because this is a thing with a lot of people that worry about people taking jobs. Here is the inconvenient truth. You don't want jobs. What you want is money. No one wants to do jobs. Like, we want some jobs back. Like, same argument in America. Let's get American jobs for American workers. You don't fucking want jobs. You know why you don't want fucking jobs? That's why immigrants are there in the first place. That's why you had slaves, because at some point someone was like, this is hard. Can't somebody else do it? So let's not. So when we talk, again, going back to just the whole argument of political correctness, you don't want jobs. You just want money.
Yeah,
that's what you really want. Because what's the point of doing a job? There are plenty of jobs you can do. If the by definition of a job is you doing an exercise in labor to realize a task, there's plenty of jobs available. There's plenty of them, but you don't want to do them. So
Brexit job center would be pretty good. Do you want to wash dishes in a restaurant? No fucking
way. A lot of people don't want to.
Do you want to get up at 4 a.m. and pick fruit in fields in Kent? No fucking way.
You don't, exactly. So there's no point in us pretending you want to do that, because very clearly there are definitely jobs available, but people don't want to do them because we've been weaned for so many years post-war on collective bargaining and unions and workers' rights. So We can return. If the case is returning these jobs to making them domestic, but do you know anybody who lives in Dagenham who's going to sit on a factory line with a fucking nappy on so that they can't go and take a toilet break to make an iPhone? They're not going to do that, because you've been able to enjoy the global privilege of being in a developed world.
Yeah,
and this is how you live. So,
and Chinese people get to jump out into suicide nets because you don't have to.
Because you don't have to, exactly. So you want to kill yourself because take that split up. That's the privilege we have over here. So
that was pretty gutting, though, man. I mean,
then he came back. Yeah. So what's the fucking point?
I like Jesus.
Yeah, and then Robbie Williams came back. So there was no fuck. So that was a death for nothing. But for me, it's like that's an example of globalism where it's like, you know, we have access to information. People are aware of like geopolitics and how those work.
Yeah,
you can't. How are you going? Oh, Islam is an issue. Well, then don't go to fucking Islamic states then and try to manipulate politics and demographics there, and then they won't be here.
But you know what? There's two things that I'm always struck by, which is the amount of racism and the amount of ignorance about basic things. So, for instance, the fundamental reality is that we've actually got more people in jobs now than there's ever been.
Yeah.
What you also have is a fall in living standards not seen since the 1870s because the value of money has gone down and basically the value of products and services has gone up. Yes. So people are poorer than they've ever been, and yet suddenly everyone has jobs. So the government can stand there and go, listen, you know, we've got full employment. And people are like, you know what? We got fucking full employment.
Yeah.
And then like, unfortunately, there are more immigrants coming in. They just said you'd get that under control. And then you sort of have this situation where you're like, well, the fact is the value of money has gone down. Like, what? And it's like, it's the reality of a marketplace where essentially the banks have drip-fed themselves through quantitative easing and allowed themselves to kind of still have liquidity, whereas we have had fuck all. If you're a young person, can you get a mortgage? No, you can't. If you're a very small or medium-sized business, can you get a loan? No, you fucking can't.
Nope.
But that's the point.
That's the point.
It's just
exactly the same. And this is the thing, is that we're in a time now where we're supposed to be awash with wealth and consumerism at its all-time height, but most people will never own an asset that's going to have the could last more than 3 years.
Yeah. Mm.
And that's, for me, that's what needs to be addressed. It's like, at least going to work and having a dual income used to be, you know, it was a given that you'd be able to at least afford a fucking home. But now you have this paradox where the idea you got to go to work and leave your children and work these long hours, creating this adversity in order for you to pay for childcare.
It's so true.
And it's just like, how are people not aware of this? Like, people are like, oh, well, you know, Islam is an issue. They don't integrate. Well, everywhere I go, there's a fucking Chinatown.
Yeah. Mm.
So that's not integration. True. They have their own New Year. They have their own Zodiac. You don't notice.
Yeah.
Anyone who considers themselves, cares about the armed forces, why don't you watch Rambo 3? And when you watch Rambo 3, then you can see when a man sits down to him, a Mujahideen fighter sits down and tells Rambo, we use child soldiers. We are the Taliban. We are fighting to resist the Russian or Soviet invasion. And he was like, I'm with it. It's fine. So Rambo was helping the Taliban for a long time, and that was fine.
Do you know what? I obviously think that if you choose to go and work in the armed services, you know, I mean, it's a choice I wouldn't make. But something I read at the weekend really shocked me. 13,000 armed services veterans are homeless at the minute. 13,000. Mm. These are people who we're supposed to kind of venerate in the Daily Mail narrative of sort of service and duty and working for the nation. But we don't give a fuck about them.
We don't give a fuck.
It's all bullshit.
Exactly. It's all bullshit. And see, and these people who are complaining, you got a free house, so why don't you take in lodger then?
Yeah.
Or if you're that concerned about our troops, oh, help support the troops. Well, then your NHS is becoming privatised. So these people that are suffering from amputations and need physiotherapy and counselling for post-traumatic stress disorder, they get that from the NHS. Mm. So if that disappears, that disappears for them as well. Mm. So if you really care about them, how about doing that? Instead of buying a poppy every fucking year. Because what you're doing then is that you're contributing to pollution because you keep buying plastic that is non-biodegradable.
Hey, you've got a big thing, don't you, about virtue signalling, this kind of thing that, like, you have certain days of the year where people are like, oh, you know, like the poppy thing is a big thing, isn't it?
Yeah, poppies are virtue signalling, aren't they? I don't know.
They're massive virtue signalling.
I feel like there is, I don't know. I feel like it happens on both sides of the political divide, doesn't it?
On the left the most.
It's weird how a lot of these issues they're considered sort of standard political perspectives for people that are sort of in the media, for people that often have huge social media followings, have a lot of sway, a lot of sort of influence amongst young people. But I feel like in some ways, the left is traditionally considered the authority of sort of morality and ethics, and the right is considered the sort of the authority of sort of cynical pragmatism. It's like the right says, oh, we know the way the world is. We're just a bit more honest about it than you are on the left. Mm. You guys on the left, you have this dream where you think we can all live in this sort of socialist utopia, but really you're away with the fairies and actually you're not realistic. Mm-hmm. So if the left is going to have that idealism, the left really needs to be careful of hypocrisy because, you know, if you have people sort of grandstanding about one particular political perspective and saying, this is awful, and then they're shown in their private lives to be completely contradicting that and to be completely, you know, hypocritical. It's much worse than someone on the right being seen as hypocritical because they never claim to have any fucking ideology in the first place.
Exactly, and they always have that caveat all the time, is that they're conservative. So if they say something deplorable, then they're allowed to say
it. I told you the world was shit.
Sorry. Yeah. Of course I was on a boat with a Russian oligarch. I love money.
Exactly.
Whereas like, if it's like, I'm really sorry, I write for the Socialist Worker, I went to Shoreditch House once, that's it for me, that I'm done here.
Yeah, so I mean, I always make it a point of principle to include like certain ideas about
I think in my material, because with the idea of hypocrisy, I think people shouldn't be so upset by hypocrisy, because really it's just the lag between your aspirations and reality. It's like, yeah, I'd like to be like that, I'd like to do those things, I'd like to be perfect, but do you know what, it's fucking hard.
Yeah, because morals are a commodity themselves a lot of the time. Like, you know, there's a lot of people, like, everyone would love to eat organically sourced and grown food, but it's fucking expensive.
But do you know what,
I frequently tell people I'm vegetarian, but then I have a couple of beers and I'll eat some chicken. You know?
Do you know what?
Not going to stop people. I'm telling people I'm vegetarian.
When we did the revolution, when we televised in the second series, there was like a sketch straight away about Nike, and I've got issues with it, but I've still got Nike trainers.
You do, right? Very nice ones. Both of you actually. Dane's got some fantastic ones.
I did sketches about Apple. I've still got an iPhone. I did sketches about Google. Should I not do a search engine? Should I not use a fucking search engine?
Well, exactly.
I literally have people just being like, "You're a hypocrite." Yeah. I'm like, "No, I'm fucking not. What are you doing? I'm drawing attention to a social issue, which hopefully can be changed."
And not just that. At least you have the choice. It's not like you are working actively to propagate this system, but you're aware of it at the same time as well. Just, you know, in the exact same way. I live in the fucking UK. We consume a lot more than our fair share of the world's resources. I don't do it on purpose. It's not like I wake up and press my button to conform to this idea. So all these people, these are just lethargic devils, and that is just, and that annoys me, is that immediate defensiveness, where it's like, yeah, but you got an iPhone. Well, how the fuck do you think I found out about this then?
Dude that lives inside you with that voice, I love that dude.
Yeah, because there's this need, this lethargic need, where people get defensive and it's like, yeah, but you're doing this and blah, blah, blah. Well, then fine. We're all doing this. But if it continues, then we're going to run out of coltan and we're running out of that resource and we're going to start killing people and I'm going to fucking kill you.
Yeah.
So I don't know. So then when we get back to this point that you insist upon, of this archaic draconian time where men spoke and women listen, then I will fucking split your skull and take your wife, since you want to go back to that point in time.
So your argument, Dane, is that if you want to go back to a post-apocalyptic world where climate change has got rid of all rules and regulations and there's no police force, I will eat you and your wife.
I'll tell you for a fact, these so-called conservatives, they'll remember that they're fucking they'll become real liberal when that happens, because everyone's like, support our troops. Well, then why don't you join the fucking armed forces then?
Yeah,
or why don't you do it for free? Because it's very easy for you to volunteer for these things. You don't do it. So
it really is. I hope that 2018 will be the year where, in a lot of ways, the veil comes off, because I do feel we've reached a point of critical mass. Like, I think the general election last year showed young people are engaged in a different way. There is so much information on social media. It's one of the good things, I think, about it. There are a lot of quote-unquote woke people now, much more engagement, and much more through ethnic minorities, much more through younger generation.
Yeah. You know, all we have to do is wait for the old people to die and everything's going to be fine.
Well, this is the thing. Like,
it's going to be 10 years,
and that's
max.
All it is. It's just we are at a point, I guess, because most of us in our experiences, the people that are alive now, are people that may have been alive, or baby boomers to, I guess, say, millennials.
Mm.
Now, most of these people, especially in the developed world, have not experienced a conflict to the scale of like the World War One and Two.
Of course.
So they've had it relatively good for a very, very long time, which is why, because of this amnesia, people are able to have these heated exchanges, because the consequences have never been as high as they were at that time.
Yeah.
So all that means is that we're just arriving at a point now where, following that system, then we enjoyed capitalism and, you know, that kind of replaced, I suppose, mercantilism and monarchism. And we've had this new time of like a free economy. And now we've just now gotten to a point now, it's not working anymore.
Mm.
And all it is that we just need to stop this social inertia and accept that some of the systems that have governed our lives over the last 50 to 60 years are becoming obsolete. And so we just need to find a new way to live. So even though we do get very heated about these exchanges, I just feel like, you know, we're just getting to a point. We've had a good run, or we've had a run to this point, but the way we were living doesn't work anymore.
I like that theory.
Dane Baptiste, thank you so much for joining us on
Newsroast,
man.
Great work on the show, man. If I didn't say before, man, I loved watching the show on BBC as well.
Thank you, man.
Good work.
Well,
man.
Listen, what have people got to look forward to that's coming up? We got the show on Comedy Central.
Yes. I have a show on Comedy Central filmed. It's called Live at the Soho Theatre. That's now available on Comedy Central on demand, and also available for Virgin Media users. So enjoy that. As well as the Netflix specials, Live at the BBC. If you search for Live at the BBC, my big shiny Danny Head will come up. So brilliant. Please do check that out.
And also begin, and a new podcast series.
And a new podcast series called Dame Baptiste Questions Everything. So look out for that. And just begin my national tour at the end of the week. So go on to damebaptiste.co.uk.
All around the UK.
Get some tickets. And I'm all around the UK. And also going to Australia, New Zealand, South Africa, and Estonia and Finland, to name some of the few places
we're traveling. We are massive in Finland. So, you know, all our Finnish fans.
Just want to say big up.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Welcome back to News Roast. If you missed us, well, you know, obviously we've got an awful lot to talk about over the coming weeks. This show will be coming out every 2 weeks. We've got some astounding guests, but I don't want to drop their names yet because they could pull out. You can subscribe to this podcast on any of your favourite podcast sites, be that Spotify, Apple, any of those. And please, please, please rate and review the podcast. And I don't know 1-star rating. I'm talking 5-star ratings. It was probably something about how me and Hayden are occasionally talking over our guests, how sometimes we aren't woke enough, but that we're open to any of it. So thank you so much for listening. See you soon.
Bye.